This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
We'll go over those in great detail tomorrow. Do we know about Shedeur Sanders' hands?
Bring your tape measures with you.
We did that. Early version of this show did that. Not only that, if you look over at the doorway,
Are there hand measurements over there?
We have our heights listed.
Your heights are listed.
We will actually, behind you, Daryl, host a broad jump event later on.
Okay. There's a little bit of space in there.
Do I got to run a 40?
Got to get ready, man.
Owen, when did we do that? Has anybody...
The heights?
Okay, do you think anybody shrunk since then?
I don't know. Double A's on there, so...
When do
it's been at least 2 years.
Oh, it was more than that. I thought it was like...
It's probably 3 or 4 years ago, yeah.
We all shrink.
I'm feeling
taller than ever. These new shoes I have.
We should totally have a fan combine.
Good luck.
Again, we did the hand measurements.
I will scout.
About seven or eight... Was it the Manziel draft?
It's been a while ago, yeah. Actually, I think it was.
Was it Baker?
It was the year that Jared Goff was drafted, I believe.
I'm just impressed those markings are still on the door jamb.
You thought the dust would cover it up?
Yeah, pretty much.
or still
a fresh coat of paint.
No. They're still hanging on. Meanwhile, the Cavaliers. What a story. They continue to be such a great story. Last night was a rare game that you could actually talk a little bit about the game, but most of these games are over, you know, by halftime, like Friday night.
Yeah, but fans were still like leaving the arena last night with a minute to go.
And yeah, you were there.
It's like a 4-point game. I'm like, where are you people going? This thing isn't over. I mean, the Cavs are up, but
yes,
either you're really in that big of a hurry to hit the garage and beat the traffic, or you're just that confident that the Cavs had it in the bag.
Well, Ty Jerome... A magnificent fourth quarter. He had 15 points. I still can't get over this stat. 40-0. The Cavs are 40-0 when they are leading
after three quarters. Yeah.
So that's been a formula for them. The fact that, you know, the Grizz are 37-20. They're a good team.
You know what? Last night was we should be talking about what an off night it was for the Cavs. They did not win by 10 points. That was their 13th win this year by less than 10 points. What's going on with the Cavs?
What's going on is they shot 13 of 47 from three.
Oh, is that what it was?
But they were...
That explains why they ended up with like 57 rebounds last night.
Well, they had 22 offensive boards.
I know.
I mean, that is ridiculous. And part of it is Jaren Jackson got in foul trouble, which he does. And he got in foul trouble 10 minutes into the third. So
they were like 1 for 22 in the first half, shooting threes. Players not named Donovan Mitchell. Like, Donovan was like 3 of 6 at halftime, and the rest of the team was 1 for 22. And they were still leading at halftime.
So you are starting to hear the national guys really not just talk about, okay, Cavs are for real. We know the Cavs are for real. Like, that's been ironed out. Tim Bontemps, who some people think has been a Cavs hater over the years. I mean, he came on with us on Friday, and he almost... I gotta say, he almost would like laughed off my question. He's like, "Yeah, we all know the Cavs are for real," Because I try to say, hey, is the national media coming around? He's like, we've come around. Like, they're good. They're good. There's no asterisk. There's no, oh, we're waiting for regression to the mean, or this is a plucky, nice story, but come playoff time. He's like, no, the Cavs can absolutely go toe-to-toe with the best teams in the NBA, which means that they are 100% championship contenders now. I think when we talked about it after that loss to Boston the last time around, and after they had gotten their clocks cleaned by Oklahoma City, where we couldn't even dribble the basketball and those guys were just all over us defensively. And before the DeAndre Hunter trade, I think everybody was like, all right, there's still a pecking order here. Boston is a clear number one. We are a clear number two. And since then, since they got DeAndre Hunter, and just you've seen more of them and there's no let up, it just seems like the Cavs, that Knicks game, I mean, the Knicks have been in our heads the last few years.
Yes, they're still in their heads. I mean, they're after the game, they're openly talking about, yeah, I mean, Kenny Atkinson's like, yeah, guys, I guess I heard the narrative that they were soft or they weren't tough or they got dominated on the glass in that series. But I hear the players still talking about that series. So that Knicks series is very much still on their mind. Donovan Mitchell mentioned how he is appreciative of what happened with the Knicks because of that taking place and the way they were dominated. They're at this point now. They're fueled by it. It's gotten them to this point.
I don't think we look at it as like, man, we need to kick their ass because they beat us. I think for us, it's more like, it sucks to lose. You know what I mean? In the moment, I probably wouldn't say, I'm appreciative we lost. But looking back at it, this is pretty much, you know, obviously not pretty much, but like close to the same core guys that were there and experienced those, I don't want to call them blowouts, but rough performances. You know what I'm saying? And basically got out tough. And now you look at where we've all grown as a unit because of that. You know, I'm definitely appreciative of it. I don't really have a revenge type feeling. It's more so like this really is shaping us to be who we are. You don't just make a trade for myself and it just clicks. Like, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't always happen like that. You have to go through those times. And that's kind of been my mindset on it. I don't really have any other feelings on it more so than, like, I appreciate it because it's really helping us continue to be who we want to be because we can have something to fall back on and remember of how that felt, to be honest.
Now, Mitchell scored 33 points last night as his team has now won 7 in a row. And there seems to be just absolutely no let up with this team.
I think for us, it's like the foot on the throat mentality. You know what I mean? Keeping a team down when they're down. That's the ultimate test. You're getting a bunch of different things. We've won close games. We were down in New York early in the season, came back and won. DG's closed. I've closed. Ty's closed. Like, Evan's closed. You know what I mean? So there's just so many things we're learning. We're not perfect, but I think, you know, as if we had to really look at ourselves in the mirror, we know we're pretty happy with where we're at, but there's a lot more for us to continue to grow. But the biggest thing is just no level of complacency, whether we're up, whether we're down, still trying to be the best team we can be.
You know, as you continue to watch them and they answer every single question, I mean, they didn't have Darius Garland last night. They didn't shoot well in this game. There's so many times over the last month where I've talked about all the things that might be working against them, and yet they come out and win. The fact that Knicks game was the second game of a back-to-back, I know it was the same for the Knicks. The Knicks were in overtime the night before. But still, that you're not supposed to just come out second night of a back-to-back and just roll teams the way they did the Knicks. And so then they have, this was a game, like before the game I saw once the Darius Garland news came out, people were like, all right, we're going to lose this one. Nope. Had the lead at halftime despite how poorly they shot. So you continue to see this team makes fans proud. I mean, I really think that's the way this is. Every time you see this team, every time you invest your time in them, there's a payoff. And now the only question is, what would change in the playoffs? And I've been worried about Boston. I thought Boston all along was the better team, but I'm giving us a chance now. Like and of course, if we beat Boston, we can win the whole thing. We can win the championship. That's where this question enters into the picture, because did you see over the weekend the Lakers and the Nuggets, Daryl?
I saw the final score. I saw what the Lakers did, but I don't think I am believing in what you're about to pitch.
Well, the Nuggets had won 9 straight, and they were starting to look like the Nuggets of a couple of years ago that won the championship and basically steamrolled their way through with Jokic just looking like the best player alive. Yesterday, or during that game, was it on Saturday night between the Lakers and the Nuggets? That was the first time Luka looked like Luka.
Yeah.
And he had 32 points. LeBron had 25. That after he had just scored 40. So LeBron is continuing to play well. Austin Reeves, you got to now give it up to their head coach, who a lot of people, you know, Redick, when he got hired, that was like, well, we're just hiring a former player broadcaster.
Well, it looked a little dicey just even when the Lakers came to town.
Podcast co-host.
I popped in to his pregame presser, and I was like, I don't know if this dude's making it through
that
the season.
Early in the year.
That's right? What I'm saying. Like, yeah. I mean, he was just taking the shrapnel like you couldn't believe it. I'm like, I don't know if this guy even survives the season. And now here they are.
Yeah, now here they are. Daryl, Vegas. Now, I know it's the Lakers. There's always going to be an inflated price on teams like the Lakers, the Cowboys, the Yankees, whatever.
They want your money.
But the Lakers now have the sixth best odds to win the championship. So, dare I ask, Daryl, would a championship over LeBron James in the finals?
That would be delicious. I'm not going to lie. That would be delicious. For as much love and respect we all have for LeBron, right? For ending the drought and just what an incredible experience that particular summer in 2016 was. This group of Cavaliers beating LeBron in the finals, which, by the way, I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think the Lakers are getting there. But to play along, I think that would just be absolutely the one of the all-time. It really would be all-time. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it would top 2016. To me, what would top 2016 is if the Cavs won two championships without LeBron. If this group that got put together now, if they're able to win two titles, that would trump 2016. But beating LeBron in an NBA Finals for the second title? Oh, that would be scintillating. I'm in.
I just know there are a lot of fans out there who, even though LeBron won a title, the fact that he left twice, the fact that he's now been in L.A. as long as he's been there, he's won a championship with the Lakers, there would be nothing better for them than to have a Cavs team beat LeBron. LeBron be on the losing end of a championship run, one that had nothing to do with LeBron James whatsoever.
Well, remember, he went on a podcast. It was the Kelce Brothers podcast, New Heights, where he was like, something to the effect of, I set the foundation. And it's like, no, you didn't set the foundation. You left rubble behind for the second time again. You didn't lay the foundation for anything. Right? They were not in a good spot when he left.
All right, 216-474-0092. Want to hear from the fans. Would a title over the Lakers and LeBron be the ultimate prize? Would that be even bigger than 2016? I just heard Jeff Thomas in the update. Brown saying bye-bye to Juan Thornhill.
Least surprising news ever.
Daryl, you literally mentioned Juan Thornhill, I think the segment before, about his future in Cleveland. So I'm guessing you are not surprised.
No, not at all. Disappointing results from that signing. I loved it when it happened, so I'm not going to sit here and say that I saw that coming. But really, I mean, I needed Owen to refresh my memory because I was like, the next play Juan Thornhill makes for the Browns would have been the first, and then he reminded me. He did have pick six against the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think that was in a preseason game now that I'm thinking about it. Because I'm looking at the box score from last year. He didn't do anything in that.
So, yeah, I mean, he never made any plays here. And the whole point of bringing him in and pairing him with Grant Delpit was to create two big playmakers in that secondary. And one of the most aggravating things for me, besides quarterback play, is when I watch other teams, the impact that safeties have in this league. And I'm waiting for the Browns to, I don't know, get their safeties to make plays and have impacts in games. And that's why they gave Thornhill the contract they did and brought him over from Kansas City, won a couple Super Bowls with them. And I think everyone, myself included, was excited at the time about the signing. He was going to come in, teach these guys how to win, yada, yada, yada. And he just really did nothing in his 2 years here. Just massive, massive disappointment.
No, it didn't work out. And, I mean, even before him, it was John Johnson III. Who was the other player from the Rams?
I think the next safety that Andrew Berry signs as a free agent that turns out to be worth it.
Who was the corner?
Nickel corner.
That they also brought over from the Rams that year with John Johnson
III. Was it Troy Hill?
Troy Hill,
yeah,
that's it.
Troy Hill, yeah.
And he went back to the Rams. I think that was a one and done.
Yeah. You've at least got to get some credit here because you had no clue who Juan Thornhill was the day after they signed him.
He
showed up for you by not showing up at all.
Remember, that was the first name, and I laughed. I'm like, is this the big free agency splash? Because remember, we thought the Browns were just going to go on a tear that year in free agency. Now, we ended up getting Za'Darius Smith and Tomlinson that same offseason, yeah. Right? Owen, so it wasn't the splash. Yeah. Thornhill was not the headliner.
He wasn't the splash, but
when they did it, it's just we were so desperate for anybody, and people were like, what a savvy move. And on paper, it did make sense.
It was a role player that was projected to be an everyday player, you know, every down player. And Juan Thornhill showed us that he's probably a role player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what he is.
Mary Kay adds that says it's a post June 1st designation will happen at the start of the league year, March 12th, obviously for salary cap purposes. So it's just another hole that the Browns need to fill.
Which means now this is important that it's them doing post June 1. That means they only got one more slot because you can do two. So you got who's going to be the second post June 1 designation? Is that Miles Garrett? If they trade him? So keep that in mind now. That's actually a pretty important piece that Mary Kay just reported there, the post-June 1.
Get to them. Does 2026 still count as post-June 1st, technically? I'm just holding out hope. I'm holding out hope for one more year, Miles. Okay.
They're basically splitting them, looking at right now. I think his dead cap for this year is 12.4. So you're splitting that over 2 years. So it's, you know, instead of 12.4 hit this year, it's a 6.2 hit.
Yeah.
Man, but again, that just emphasizes, though, keep that in mind now going forward in this offseason, who that second post June 1, who they're going to use for that.
You know, watching the Browns and watching under Jim Schwartz, such an aggressive defense, obviously, where they either just completely dominated, you know, at the line of scrimmage. They'd have these games where Miles would just be so, so dominant that these other teams wouldn't have a chance. Or there'd be games where our secondary would just have these mix-ups where everybody would be staring at each other and we'd be sitting here on Monday trying to figure out whose mistake was it. And oftentimes, Daryl, we couldn't figure it out,
right.
And the players were not on the same page on whose mistake it was.
Yeah,
and I do wonder about that. You know, was that a Thornhill thing? Was he just always in the wrong place, taking bad angles?
It was such a bad look when it happened, right? And then I will give him credit. He stood up. He said, hey, that was on me. The lack of effort was on me. That should never happen. It's never going to happen again. But it was a shocking admission, the fact that he admitted that, yeah, he bailed on the play,
yeah.
So to speak, right? You never hear. So on one hand, I can't rip him for it because he manned up. He admitted to his mistake. The problem is the mistake happened, right? That he did it to begin with. And that is, I think that is pretty much the 2024 season in microcosm. Yeah. Not that guys gave up. Don't misunderstand me there, but just that. I don't even know how to say it. Like I don't attitude or just it just kind of encapsulated that season, right? That just one little choice that was made ended up being a massive problem and a massive mistake that, you know, burned them bad.
And also, if the one thing you can give Barry some credit for when it comes to picking up receivers the way he has with Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy, who had really great moments last year, also ended with a...
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dud the last few games, but kind of foot out the door situation there.
Well, or also understand who the quarterback was.
Oh, absolutely. I would also add definite blind spot in the secondary. He has not been able to really help the team. And that unless Martin Emerson, but, you know, that was in the draft, and Martin Emerson was one of the worst-rated corners in the league last year after having a great rookie campaign.
I'm starting to get concerned about Andrew Berry's blind spots. He seems to have a lot of them when it comes to, not spreadsheets and numbers, but when it comes to just, I don't know, picking football players who can play.
Yeah. All right, before the break, and now it's an official poll question. Mitch put it up on the show page. I retweeted it. Would a Cavs finals victory over the Lakers be bigger than 2016? And I'm curious here because I have said time and time again, and in fact, Ken got into it with me late last week, that I'm miffed anytime anybody just comes on here and slams LeBron. Like, the guy delivered something that no other athlete delivered. And without him, they would not have done. There's no other combination of players. There's no way that you're winning a championship with anybody outside of LeBron. First of all, you couldn't get that player. But LeBron, because he was born here, because we were lucky enough to have that, he comes here, he wins the title. And I said the second time he left, I'm like, he could leave five more times. He won the championship. I'm not going to talk badly about him after that.
Doesn't mean
I'm rooting for him. I did not root for him to win the championship in the bubble. I wanted his Cavs title to be his last title.
Well, just like I want Kyrie Irving's Cavs title to be his only title.
Yeah.
Like, I view LeBron is I do view him amongst the all-time greats. He's right up there. At least in my lifetime, players that I've watched. I mean, I grew up in the Jordan era. I hated Michael Jordan, but I respected and was in awe of those Chicago Bulls teams. I was glued to my TV for The Last Dance. I mean, I binged that. I couldn't separate myself from the TV because I was so captivated by reliving that era. Even though growing up watching the Cavaliers, watching Jordan be the roadblock, he was the John Elway to the Cavs, right, at that time. But I view LeBron right there, Jordan, LeBron, and Kobe. I am blessed to have lived to watch those three players and their greatness. For me, they're 1A, 1B, 1C. I can't, I'm torn between, who's 1, 2, and 3 there. But the way I look at LeBron is, you know, the way he left Cleveland, we all know, was just absolutely horrible. And he deserved every ounce of criticism he got, right? He became the villain in the NBA, right? Well, then he comes back to Cleveland, he makes good. He comes back, says, I'm going to make sure we win a championship. And he delivered. And once that happened, Anthony, that for me, okay, you made good. You atoned for your sin. You've got a clean slate. What you do with the rest of your life is all up to you. Wish you well. Doesn't mean I'm going to root for you, but thank you very much. Like I don't understand, to your point, I don't understand the animosity folks still have towards him. Like, I just don't. He forced he forced Golden State to go get Kevin Durant. Like, I have more animosity toward Kevin Durant because Durant's a bandwagon jumper.
And we would have won more titles. I mean, 2017, they would have beaten anybody.
I have more animosity to Kyrie Irving because he basically torpedoed that era of Cavs basketball by wanting out, right? Yeah. And this is a player, and I've talked about this. Kyrie is a great, great player. Now, I can't speak now because I haven't been around him, but I remember when he was with the Cavaliers, Kyrie just was unhappy all the time. Like, I think that's something he just, whether he just didn't like being here or whatever, but like, you have an all-time great that came home to help you win championships, and now you don't want to be a part of it because you think you should be the man, right? There's jealousy that LeBron, you know, because this was, I guess, supposed to be his team, and then LeBron came home and took it over to go get Kevin Love and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't get that. It, having LeBron to help you win championships? Why would you want to bail on that? And then everywhere Kyrie has gone, was Boston was a disaster. Brooklyn was a disaster.
Until last year.
Until last year with, you know, I just, so I will never root for Kyrie Irving to ever win another NBA championship. And, yeah, I would absolutely love if the Cavs beat LeBron.
Well, just think about what kind of couple of weeks that would be and the fallout afterwards. Like those finals with LeBron James, can you imagine him coming here, getting booed on every possession again, which is what would happen? It would be so bizarre. What a crazy story. And these players have mentioned LeBron. In fact, you've heard Cavs teams mention LeBron for like 5 years, trying to win without him. Because, you know, anybody that's here knows it's almost impossible to outdo what LeBron did with his career in Cleveland. But one way you could start, like Donovan Mitchell, you don't think a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who knows, you know what a championship would do for Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland? How they talk about his career now. There's so many lists that don't even have him as a top 10 player. And now all of a sudden, if he wins a championship here with this Cavs team, and then, oh, by the way, you're doing it against Luka and LeBron with the Lakers, that'd be like an NBA shattering, you know, all the mythology, all the stuff that's built up about how the NBA and the types of teams that win a championship. And the Cavs have been the team with two small guards and the two bigs. That's not a way to do it. It would shatter so many norms that we have developed about the blueprint of winning a championship.
I am curious, in a moment of true honesty, if I were to walk around that Cavalier locker room and just start polling the players about the whole LeBron shadow thing and the is that something that's driving you guys to pave your own legacy?
Why does it keep coming up?
Yeah. Well,
it just came up last week. We played audio.
Well, it keeps coming up because, LeBron's the only one that's ever done it here, right? 52 years between championships, between the Browns won in 64 and the Cavaliers won in 2016. Well, that's why it keeps coming up.
And you know for a fact, if the Browns ever get to like the AFC championship game, we are going to be doing questions about, is this Browns player bigger than LeBron now?
Because, well, no, it'll be, is now this quarterback about all better than Bernie Kosar, right?
But the comparison is going to be LeBron. LeBron's the championship.
Okay.
He's the guy in this town that won championships. He did what the great Indians teams and players were unable to do. He's the guy that delivered it, you know, in our lifetime. And you know for a fact, that's all we're going to do. We were comparing Baker Mayfield to LeBron James.
Well, earlier,
because we were so desperate to find something else that wasn't LeBron.
Well, earlier today we were talking about, is this the best Cavs offensive team in history? And you brought up the 2017 squad and just how great they were. But this particular team scoring at a higher clip, right?
Yeah, all their numbers are better.
I mean, just all the metrics. The fact that they've got, I think it's four times this year, they've scored 140 points, which is a franchise record. They shattered early in the season. There was another, right out of the gate, they had shattered, like, I think it was maybe the 130 mark, games with 130 points, whatever. But, I mean, this year's Cavaliers team is just setting all kinds of new benchmarks previously set by LeBron. I admit, I'd like to see them win 67 games. With all due respect to LeBron, that's not me throwing shade at LeBron and what he did for the Cavaliers. I want to make that very clear. But I love greatness. I love history. And watching these guys the way I have the last couple of years and the way they've come up.
Well, you just used the term.
I would love nothing more for them to set new benchmarks that were previously set by the greatest player in franchise history.
Daryl, you said you love greatness. It takes winning championships for most. You know, the rare one-offs are Joe Thomas. You know, those players are few and far between.
Yeah.
Not just in Cleveland, but everywhere where you can truly associate greatness.
I think that's
greatness.
The Miles thing, right? That's why people are so polarized on Miles, because he's a future Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And the Browns have never, and I realize I wasn't around in the 50s in the early 60s to see with my own eyes those teams. But for me, I don't think the Browns have ever had a defensive pass rusher like Myles Garrett in their history, in their storied history. They've never had a player like that, and they may have to trade him. That's devastating.
Well, we did get a little bit of Browns news about 20 minutes ago. Juan Thornhill, goodbye. He has gone, which means they're going to be paying him, like, in terms of the dead cap, $9 million in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to save a little this year. They saved like $3.5 million, somewhere around there. But, again, just another example of having to, you know, kick dead cap into the future. And so next year they're going to have to kick a little there. And they only have one more post-June 1 slot available to them this offseason to try and, again, kick cap down the road. It's going to be interesting to see how they use it and who they use it on.
Yeah, it says they'll carry his $5.6 million cap hit into June and take on dead cap hits of $3.18 million in 2025 and 2026, $9.26 million. Boy, the Browns are like the biggest beneficiaries ever of every year. The TV contract getting a huge increase.
Here's the problem I think that they're going to run into. At some point, you'd have to think the NFL is going to oversaturate itself. In other words, there's only so many Black Friday games and Christmas games on Netflix. And right? I mean, for driving revenue to keep this cap on this steady incline that we've seen, I don't know what else the NFL can do to create that revenue, Anthony. Because if they can't keep creating it, the cap is going to level off, and then the bill's going to come due, and it's, you know, I don't know, maybe the debut of the Brook Park Dome is not going to go as well as we're all thinking it's going to go in 2029. Because they'll be stuck in, you know, salary cap, you know what.
It's just how many guys can they afford to really do this and then have any edge in free agency when they really need to pluck guys? Might not matter if they're in a total rebuild the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, like, cash is never the problem. We've talked about this. You can say what you want about the Haslam Sports Group as owners of the Browns and the results on the field and the job that the people that they have hired to produce positive results on the field have done, but the one thing you cannot criticize them for is their willingness to spend to win. Winning has no cost to them. Whatever it costs, they're willing to pay it. They just got to find a way to do it. You know what I mean? Again, $300 million they spent last year for a team that won three games. And that doesn't include the facility upgrade bill that they covered and paid for. They're giving the players... And I think this is the other reason why I'm so hard on the organization and the players. They have everything at their disposal. There's no excuses for them not to be successful. They have every tool imaginable. You've got a chief strategy officer who comes up with all the probabilities and everything else, right? Gives Kevin Stefanski the information, which Kevin Stefanski absorbs and a lot of times employs. Just look at what he does on fourth down, right? Because the analytical data says you're better off in some situations, especially inside the 20, going for it on fourth down instead of kicking the short field goal. Even though me, I'm Mr. Take the Points guy, but I understand the philosophy. Just even if it doesn't agree with my own opinion. But like, they have every tool, new weight room, these rooms where they can, you can put film on the wall, project it on the wall, and you can be in there like you're in the middle of the defense or the offense, and you can simulate and run through stuff. Like, the tools that organizationally the Haslams give these guys, there's no excuse for them to be as god-awful to watch as they typically are. They're spending money to try and get this thing right. So, again, you can criticize ownership for a lot of things, but desire to win, willing to give the resources to win, those are two things you can't criticize. You can criticize the people they hire. You can criticize the results on the field. But you can't criticize their desire to win and their willingness to provide the resources to make that happen. I have had people in that building tell me the Haslams don't say no. If you tell them it will help them win games, they do not say no. They just say, how much does the check have to be written out for?
All right, Daryl, we had a poll question up. on the show page.
Yep.
On whether or not there is a way that a title this year for the Cavaliers could eclipse what happened in 2016. Right now, overwhelmingly, no, 60%.
Really?
But we did have some people saying, hey, you beat LeBron this year. The Lakers are playing better. They just snapped a big win streak by the Nuggets. Looked convincing. Luka was incredible. And the Lakers now have the sixth best championship odds.
Yeah, I think that's easy to say in February. I guarantee you in June, if that were to come to light, and it actually is a win over the Lakers, we will be flooded with phone calls of people saying
this is the best.
This is the best. I mean, remember, this is way better than 22.
Yeah.
There will be 2.6 million people at that parade.
Even bigger parade.
Pack them all in. Will Machine Gun Kelly do backflips off of the stoplights?
How many F-bombs will Donovan Mitchell drop at the the parade rally?
Oh, man. I mean, it changes everything. And we have had a number of people tell us the last 4 years that any snapshot moment in time for the Cavs has been better than 2016. And I'm like, guys, Colin Sexton, Lowry Markkanen, this is not better than 2016. No, I'm having more fun. They're trying so hard. There's no drama. Like, okay, sound ridiculous.
Those four years of LeBron were a lot of work, but they were fun. The NBA Finals are always fun.
They
man.
Were amazing. We were the epicenter of the sports summers. Every time, John and Willoughby, go ahead.
Hey guys,
what would be better, John?
You know, this is an unpopular opinion, and basketball purists will disagree with me, but it's going to be really hard to top that 2016 LeBron era championship. LeBron being from Northeast Ohio, getting him out of high school, not making it work for him. He goes off to expand his professional career, comes back, the big return, and then brings home the championship. It was bigger than basketball. It was bigger than in normal life. A Wednesday night in downtown Cleveland, you couldn't get a reservation because everyone was flying in to watch the LeBron show. So,
and that's still not happening. They're getting big crowds, but that's not happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have the Steelers guys driving up for a game on a weeknight, and so
that's okay. We don't want Steelers guys in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. The league also, like, a good point is, the league's in a different place, and it's kind of losing popularity. You know, we were in the prime of Steph and the Warriors and a bunch of other superstars who are now out of the league in 2016, 17. So it's changed too, but it's just going to be hard. It's going to be really hard for anything to top that. Also, sad about the Juan Thornhill moving on from him and taking a loss. You know, sometimes I wish that the Dolans and the Haslams could just switch teams because, you know, as a league with a salary cap in the NFL, sometimes you got to be willing to say no to effectively manage the team. And then the Haslams, obviously, like you guys just talked about, are yes people.
Boy, John, you must have been, thank you. You must have heard FML earlier today. I've been told I have to learn to say no to my toddler.
You're Mr. Pacifier as a father right now. Just anything to get your kid to do what you want him to do.
Maybe don't give the Haslams Amazon Prime on their getting players.
At some point, yeah, you got to put the stop sign up.